There is a small, unique area in Minneapolis, located on the west bank of the Mississippi River and adjacent to the university. It is known as Cedar Riverside. This area is the object of a planned urban renewal project. Since its origination, the renewal project has been the object of very much controversy, due largely to the fact that the residents are especially fond of their community as it is. I asked some of the residents and shopkeepers to describe their area.
It's really a very strange neighborhood. Until probably about 15 years ago, it was mainly bars and I think a red light district and sort of a colorful other side of the tracks type of neighborhood. Then the university expanded over here. A lot of what was happening in Dinkytown maybe 10 years ago is happening over here now. Coffee houses, small shops, handmade stuff, a lot of young people living in sort of unconventional lifestyles. And it's an odd combination. It's probably about half people under 25 and maybe the other half people over 65. And we get along pretty well.
I think this part of town is, can't be beat as far as good things for the people. And they're doing things that are going to help the people.
Well, it's constantly moving, and it's a very fluid station, around here. 4 or 5 years ago, very few students and a lot of older people. And every year it changes and it gets a reputation. And the reputation, of course, enhances sorts of ideas. And people come into the area for those kinds of things. It's known to have a lot of heads. And it's known to have a lot of little neat shops. And, I'm sure there are people that take little tourist tours around the area. And it's kind of helped by the fact that once the area gets a reputation, certain other things help it along. And like a lot of the buildings, there are, giant paintings. And one almost feels that you're living in cartoon land. And the age of the kids has gone down lower and lower. We have a lot of 16, 14-year-olds. A lot of kids who come in after school and dress. And a lot of kids who are from rich neighborhoods who come and live here for the summer or whatever, And so it's gradually changing, and supposedly, I suppose, in the Twin City area is a place where, heads can meet other heads and where dope can be bought. But there are a lot of other things. It happens to have one of the best, very good dance company, and happens to have some good theaters. It happens to have a lot of neat people. The reality of Cedar Riverside is a very complex thing. And I get very uptight when people try to do a superficial sort of thing, either by saying it's just all hippies and it's got to be cleaned up, or this is really, in the heads, it's a really freaky, neat place to live. And somewhere there's a reality there, and it's a community made up of a really wide continuum of different types and different personalities. And so far they've been integrating quite well.
The Housing and Redevelopment Authority has very comprehensive plans for this area. The Cedar Riverside Urban Renewal Plan, which was passed by the City Council in 1968, was specifically designed to recognize the potentiality of the area and is designed to provide desperately needed housing for students and staff of the educational and medical institutions in the area. University Community Properties is the corporation which owns most of the property involved. It is operated by the partners of Heller and Siegel. They have worked very hard at developing plans to submit to HRA for approval. They seem to be progressive and complete. But the residents have reservations about the plan and also resent the fact that they haven't been consulted about it.
I can't really claim to speak for the West Bank Ministerial Association simply because we haven't had a chance to meet since this issue became current. But I think I can speak for a moral point, and also in a way a theological point. I won't be too long. But the moral point is that people, any people, have a higher right, higher than any human laws, to control their own destiny. And something very significant is happening in that regard in this area. And that is, people are beginning to come together into a real community which will speak with one voice on issues when any member of that community is threatened from forces outside that community. Now, in coming together this way, what we're saying is that no longer are we to be dealt with piecemeal and one by one. But when you deal with one of us, you deal with all of us. The theological point is that this kind of community is something new. It's something that's happening all over our country and all over the world, I think. It's something new, and it's happening right here in Minneapolis now, right here in Cedar Riverside. And what it is aiming at is a new kind of society in which humanity is the first value. Not money, not profit, but humanity and people's individual and collective fulfillment as human beings. And that kind of fulfillment can take place only if people's rights to determine their own destiny are recognized by everyone who deals with them. And for a long time, well, it's taken the church a long time to recognize this, I think, and more the church is recognizing this. And I just want to say that from my point of view, and from the point of view of a lot of my brother clergymen, the church is solidly behind efforts like this at expressing the collective will of the community.
They're very into that, and they have Professor Cooperman on the sociology thing, and how we all, there'll be plan integration of different economic groups, and there'll be forced communications, you know, like sidewalks will be designed for people to talk, and things like that. And one gets the feeling, that's really nice, you know, but, you know, it takes all the response of the living from me. And this whole kind of planned community is a very scary thing. It's very scary in that you're taking a plan of living type. I mean, I'm talking about Helen Segal's program, that would appeal to certain people and not appeal to other people. And by making it so complete, you're really excluding a certain population, a certain type that you really don't want. Mm-hmm. And plus, it's awful scary to have this planned community living. I mean, I find that extremely scary. I mean, I find it scary just, you know, okay, wherever you live, in your house or whatever, you're living with somebody else's ideas, you know, as far as architecture, and you can change things. But when everything is brought up to the optimum conditions of planned living, you know, you just have the feeling like it's okay, it's a more sophisticated version of Apple Valley.
Yeah.
You know, except this is meant for young college kids and young college professors. And so we have a nice intellectual Apple Valley, you know, yeah. And you want to barf, you know.
But you see, the best way to kill this kind of an area and this kind of character would be to eliminate the possibility for a great diverse number of people who would be able to live here.
And Segal have in mind eventually is the whole area being apartments, and their idea of shops, they also want to take down most of the shops that line Cedar Avenue. I don't know what their idea of what should go there is, but sort of a stainless steel type of little more or less department store type thing, like Dayton's Here and Now thing with little things to appeal to suburban high school students or something.
So therefore they got a couple of hundred apartments in an apartment block. They make a couple of hundred times what their money is. That's all they're interested in. They don't give a shit about anything else.
This presents a volatile situation whereby the concerns of the young are clashing with those of the institutions. And as with similar confrontations throughout the country, misconceptions, hostilities, and frustrations arise.
It just comes down to one thing, that it's people that want to make money off the money they have. You know, you've got so much money and you want to make more money. And they make more money and they want to make more money. All they want to do is get us out of here.
sort of plastic stainless steel type American culture seems to be sort of encroaching all the time. And the powers that are in control right now, the university and the and Heller and Siegel, refuse to let the residents have a voice and refuse to recognize the community as being the people rather than the physical structures, then there's going to have to be a confrontation. There's one guy who was at a meeting recently, probably about 60, 65, and he's pretty fired up about it. He's saying that he's not planning on leaving, you know, until the bulldozers come and carry him off physically or something.
The residents do have many extremely good suggestions. They have very legitimate concerns that should be taken into account.
A lot of what's nice about the area is a lot of the buildings really are physically really nice. A lot of the triangle bar, the complex of buildings between 4th and 3rd on Cedar, where there's a big mural, Dania Hall, McCosh's bookstore up the street, an old fire barn, who incidentally just got bought out by Heller and Siegel and is going to have to try to relocate someplace.
How do you change urban renewal from rather people removal to housing that's bad, you know? And okay, if you're going to be, you know, I criticized Heller and Siegel for not being realistic and playing their role, so then I'm going to have to be very realistic. Yeah, I know this land is extremely expensive, so I realize that if you're going to do anything with it, that we just can't have one- and two-story walk-ups. You know, land values won't permit that. I mean, that's unfortunate. Land values have been inflated. I realize that. You know, they're artificially inflated, but okay, that's a situation. That's a situation you have to deal with. I think that there have been some interesting models to study. Unfortunately, I think a couple of years ago you could have maybe done things like what Philadelphia is doing. Mm-hmm. Philadelphia is asking a certain type of frame on the outside, and you can do anything you want on the inside. They're doing a colonial thing, and they're having pretty much success on it. The World's Fair in Montreal, some interesting studies on what you could do with apartment houses. They weren't cubular. They were the ones that I saw that were terribly interesting were squares, you know, of different types. They weren't a square building, but everybody had like a, you know, like some land and, you know, like a little thing. And one got the feeling that you were living in a piece of thing that was a house, you know, just because you weren't stacked on top of one another. I don't know. They were cubicles that were placed on each other in different angles. I don't know if that gives you an idea of what I'm talking about. But you know, that was an interesting study. Madison is doing an interesting study in for their married student housing is doing some interesting things. You know, there are programs that are designed to make in, you know, high density living possible. I'm not an architect, so I really can't give you a program. But I know kind of the things that people want. I mean, people want some place where one of the biggest things, if you can have a whole house. You know, and a house has certain kinds of connotations. It's yours even if you're renting to it. And it has a connotation of stability. And I think what we're really worried about is some place like you see out by the airport, thousands of these little units where people move in for 6 months and move out. This area is scary enough, you know, to live because, you know, you have a situation where everything is temporary. Temporary that you're going to school. It's temporary that you're only making so much money. It's temporary that you're only living in this place. And if you have apartment buildings like you have over in Southeast or by the airport or a lot of other places, you know, I mean, I really start believing that that really starts having an effect on the stability of your life. Mm-hmm. And I think that there are other alternatives. There's an emotional part that says, Now, these old buildings have really served us well. I mean, everybody that I know has moved into an apartment has done major redecorations. You know, people have painted and done neat things. I mean, just have to walk around the area and see these neat houses. And would these people be so inspired if they had a brand new apartment building? And most anything brand new, unfortunately, seems so sterile that people, you know, it does lose its charm. And when you're in a sterile environment, you start feeling very hostile towards that environment. Well, I think it's a financially greater risk to start building, you know, for that reason. And then on a realistic side, I realize that you can only house so many people in these apartments, and that there is going to have to be some change made. There's certain buildings that I'd like to maintain just because they're beautiful buildings. McCosh's, which is an old firehouse, and is this extremely neat bookstore. I've gone into McCosh's and you ask him about a book. There's tons and tons of books, and he'll say, "Oh yes, I think it's over there," and he'll dig it up for you, you know. And I think it's one of the oldest firehouses in the city. I was telling you earlier about above Richter's drugstore. It's really nice. It's like an old theater. It has a shaped like a horseshoe. It has a horseshoe balcony. It's really beautiful. The building itself is quite neat. If you've ever have you seen it? It has kind of a steeple tower and bell.
Oh yeah, I've seen that.
It's very nice. Holzerman's is known throughout the city, and I'm sure parts of Minnesota has a Scandinavian import store that's been here. Some of the things there are like 1920 vintage, honest to God. And for so many of us, these things offer stability, you know, just because they are old and they're a point of reference, you know. And if anything, if we've learned anything about communal living or psychology of living in the city, is that people have to have points of references, you know. And the urban renewal programs that I've seen, like the Gateway Center, the towers, mm-hmm. None of these places have any points of references. And I think that's why people start becoming hostile and start attacking their environment, you know, namely their apartment building. And so no matter how many planned optimal meeting places you have on sidewalks, until you have those kinds of points of reference, I don't think you're going to have the community that you want.
To implement these plans and proposals, they have to be acknowledged either by University Community Properties or the HRA. They have no power without that acknowledgement. They are organizing and striving for that goal.
He is building an organization known as the Cedar Riverside Community Union. This organization will enable us to take the steps necessary for the people of our community to have a voice in the makeup and style of this area. It is not our intention to back University Community Properties into a corner. We are prepared to negotiate these issues and to allow University Community Properties to establish true ties of solidarity with the residents of the West Bank.
According to federal law, HRA can designate a residence group called a PAC group, Project Area Committee, which can play a part in the planning for a project. They don't have to do that. What we're trying to do is set up a group that could feasibly be a designated PAC group and get enough community support and enough power to pressure HRA into designating this PAC group. The ultimate goal is community control of the community.
Let's hope that this effort won't be ignored by the institutions involved in the future of Cedar Riverside. I'd like to thank Father Bill Tesco, Steve Lowry, and Katie Gruen, and other residents and shopkeepers in the area, and also the Department of Housing and Redevelopment for their cooperation in this program.